thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is all about Scientology. Lawrence Wright is a staff writer for The New Yorker. In his latest book, he reports on the Church of Scientology. He interviewed over 200 former and current Scientologists and examines the inner workings of the church and profiles its founder, the late science fiction writer L. Ron Hubbard. Lawrence Wright is the author of many books, including The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, and is the winner of the Pulitzer Prize.
You know, I thought I would talk a little bit. There's so much to say about Scientology, but here I am in Washington, which has a unique role in Scientology, and I thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of how Washington plays into Scientology. The L. Ron Hubbard was born in 1911, and when he was 12, his father was stationed here. His father was in the Navy. So little Ron came through the Panama Canal with his family. And that was a memorable trip for him because on that ship there was a figure who would change his life. And his name was Lieutenant Commander Snake Thompson. Now, many people used to say that that man didn't really exist, but he did. He was a real figure, and he was part of his assignment in the Navy. He had been a spy in Japan, and he was also a cat fancier. He was responsible for introducing Burmese cats. He was a fascinating figure. He actually trained cats, according to Hubbard, and he had a trained cat named Psycho, which anyway, young Ron Hubbard was on this ship coming through the Panama Canal on his way to Washington, and Snake Thompson had just been to Vienna to talk to Freud, and he was writing an account for the Navy. It was had to do with mental health of veterans and serving military personnel, and he had gone to Vienna to learn what he could from Freud, and he drummed some of this information into this very impressionable, avid young man. And so when they arrive in Washington, a couple of things happen. Hubbard is a Boy Scout. He claimed to be the youngest Eagle Scout ever, but regardless of his merits in that regard, he met Calvin Coolidge at the White House, and while he was here, he went to the Library of Congress, and he read up, he says, on Freud, and that Snake Thompson helped him through it. Well, that was a turning point in his career. It happened right here in Washington. When it's appropriate that we meet here also in a bookstore when we're talking about Scientology, because if there was ever, I mean, every movement in a way has a book behind it. You know, you can always dig through these movements and someone has written a book, has changed the world. For L. Ron Hubbard, that first world-shaking book was Dianetics, which came out in 1950. And it dominated the New York Times bestseller list in a way that I hope to emulate. But it so much so that it sort of set the category for self-help books. It became so popular after the war. And the theory of Dianetics is that you can heal yourself. You don't need to spend a whole lot of money. All you need to do is get at the root of your problems, which are in a section of your mind called the reactive mind. And there are buried all the fears and neuroses that have grown out of bad experiences that you've had in your lifetime. And if you can just recall them and lead them of their energy, then you will clear your reactive mind and rely entirely on your rational, analytical mind. And when you achieve that state, you will have gone clear. Well, as I said, that book sold millions of copies, and Hubbard made millions of dollars and lost them as well. He even lost control of the name Dianetics for a period of time. And he decided that there was another way. I jumped ahead of myself. I missed a valuable part of Washington history. He went to JWU. his father wanted him to be an engineer, and he really wanted he had another life in mind for himself. He was president of the gliding club here at GWU, and he was quite an adventurous character. But he didn't finish GWU. He was a miserable student. He dropped out after 2 years, although he often claimed to have completed his education here in civil engineering. That really wasn't true. But he did go on to write Dianetics, and after that he invented a religion, and it's called Scientology. Well, what is Scientology exactly? There's a lot to know about it. It's a very eccentric worldview created by a writer whose specialty was science fiction. And so there are many elements in Scientology that sound like science fiction because they were written by somebody who had written very similar things in much of his fiction. In Scientology, the idea is that you are an immortal soul. In Scientology, that is called a thetan. And you've lived before, and you'll live again. What Scientology can help you do is remember those past lifetimes and achieve your salvation. This is good news to a lot of people. And in the course of therapy that the Scientology has, it's called auditing. The auditor, between you and your auditor, there's a device. And it's called an e-meter. You hold two cans. In the old days, they used to be Campbell soup cans with the labels scraped off. There are wires connecting it to a meter, and there's a small amount of electricity passing through those wires. It's one-third of an actual lie detector. It measures your galvanic skin responses. It doesn't measure your pulse or your respiration. But it does do something. And so when you're talking to your auditor, the needle is constantly registering. Now, in Scientology, they think that it measures the mass of your thoughts. They think thoughts have mass. And you can see the movement as they disaggregate. Say an old painful memory might show up on the meter. And if you continually go through this thought and drain it of its painful qualities, then the needle will slow down, and pretty soon it no longer affects your behavior. If you have that happen to you, the next thing might be you would be asked, was there's an earlier event in your life that was like that? Say it was an argument with your wife. Was there some other moment in your life that resembles that moment? And you might say, yes, my mother once said the same thing to me when I was about 10. I will never forget it. Well, that's a vivid memory, and let's talk about it. And pretty soon, it calms down, and you go back further and further. And one of the things that happened during the period of time that Hubbard moved again to Washington, D.C. in 1957, living right around in DuPont Circle, I'm sure that many of you have noted one of the historic churches of Scientology, right in one of the most beautiful buildings in this neighborhood, was one of the original churches of Scientology, and he and his family lived right around the corner. So much of his theology was invented here. If during that period of time, people began to have memories in the womb. This was a controversial experiment in the history of Scientology. Could you really remember that far back? Could you remember arguments that your parents had while they were having intercourse or something like that? Because people were producing such memories. And then they began to have memories even further back of previous lifetimes. Hubbard himself began to resist that. But eventually, he endorsed it wholeheartedly. Now, let's imagine you've had that argument with your spouse. You remember the argument with your mother. Now you suddenly in your auditing, you might have an image. And the auditor say, what's that? Stop right there. What is that memory? Well, I don't know. I just had an image of a farmhouse. Well, look around. What do you see? You might say, well, I see horses, straw, you know. Well, open the door and walk outside. What do you see? Well, it looks like what I imagine France would look like in the 17th century. Well, bear in mind the e-meter might be saying, this is true, this is real. And if you believe that, it adds validity to this image that is then amplified into what feels like a real memory. And that becomes a past life. And for many people, this is as real and valid as other real memories that they've had of their current existence. But think how important that would be, that knowledge that, yes, I did live again, and therefore I am immortal.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
As we reap what we have sown, from the slaughter of the Indians to Hitler's Holocaust, dinosaurs to world wars and lives forever lost. Some may call that evolution or comic retribution. Yeah, we still create more new enemies. When there's a peaceful resolution on the brink of revolution, sing now or forever hold your peace.
Another thing that happens oftentimes in these circumstances is that people have the experience of leaving their body. In Scientology, it's called going exterior. They sense that they have floated away. They can look around behind them. They can go to other planets. Now, I'm not trying to denigrate the experiences that people have in Scientology or other religions. But if you've had such an experience, what other people say about Scientology, the criticism that they might launch against the church, isn't going to really reach them. They've had a transforming experience. They've gotten information that they find very valuable in their lives, and what you say really isn't going to reach them. Now, there are a couple of questions that people often ask me, and I'm going to treat them kind of quickly, but I think they are important. One is, was Hubbard crazy? he's often seen that way, and he did have concerns that he expressed about his own mental health. He actually wrote to the Veterans Administration for some assistance, and for some kind of psychological assistance, and we don't have any record that he ever got that. And many people have given me their diagnoses. Some professionals have weighed in with terms like malignant narcissism, paranoid schizophrenia. You know, and he certainly, if you look at his behavior and his thinking, he does show signs of a lot of these things. But nobody in history has ever mapped his own mentality quite as carefully as L. Ron Hubbard, meticulously examining every detail. Just as a writer, and here we are in our bookstore, I have to take my hat off to him. He holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the number of titles he published, more than 1,000. So he continually wrote, and mostly what he wrote about in Scientology was his own interior journey. And that is what Scientology really is. And when you enter the Church of Scientology, it's like a breadcrumb trail into his mind. The further you go into the church, the deeper into L. Ron Hubbard's mind you go. On the crazy question, though, one way I look at L. Ron Hubbard, if we were in another culture, say an Aboriginal culture, anthropologists sometimes talk of schizophrenia as being the shaman disease. People who have, you know, these experiences, sometimes they, in our culture, we would say they're crazy and they need to be on medication. But in other cultures and in other times, people who have had extraordinary mental breakdowns or journeys come back and feel like they have healed themselves, and they are the people that people go to be healed. Their mission is to heal their friends and their community. I think L. Ron Hubbard somehow saw himself that way. He had a theory of his life that he propagated as the truth. He said that he was a heroic veteran of World War II. He said that after the war, he was so badly injured that he was blinded and crippled, and that medicine couldn't help him. And so he developed his own techniques of healing, and those are the techniques that evolved into Dianetics and then became the root of Scientology. Well, the record shows that he was never injured in the war. He did have conjunctivitis, but there was nothing seriously wrong with him. But the idea of the shaman's journey is buried in the legend that he created about himself. Now, was he a con man? This is probably the most common perception of L. Ron Hubbard. I think that if he really were a con man, at some point in his life he would have taken the money and run. He never did that. He spent his entire existence, for the most part, alone with those cans in his hand, staring at the meter, trying to find what was going on inside this vast universe inside his mind. That was how he passed all of his time, in creating a bureaucracy to support this amazing theology that he had come up with. Now, L. Ron Hubbard died 27 years ago today. He was succeeded by a young man named David Miscavige, who was 25 years old when Hubbard died, and he was not the designated successor. He shoved aside his competitors and ruthlessly took control of the church. His one great legacy, of David Miscavige, also took place here. When L. Ron Hubbard died, he had made a decision to not pay his taxes for the Church of Scientology. And by 1993, the church owed $1 billion to the IRS. It didn't have $1 billion. It was an existential moment. the church had to get a tax exemption. And in order to do that, it had to get the IRS to recognize it as a religion. And there's only one agency in the country that can determine whether you are a religion or not, and that is the IRS. An organization very ill-equipped to make such distinctions.
Now for something completely different.